Thank you very much. And first of all, thank you very much for inviting. It's a true pleasure for me to be here. My first time in Oxford, and also at a time when we were hit by a snowstorm in my home city. This is almost like spring. So what I'd like to share with you today are some thoughts that I suppose are, in a certain respect, collected over quite some time. Doing research in what has become, I didn't know that in the beginning, what has become related to this so-called mobilities term. For various reasons that I will not tire with today, I shall talk about the term and not the paradigm. But we can of course dip into that discussion. What I'm interested in particular is trying to understand movement and mobilities, transportation issues, with a sort of an understanding or an interest in the more cultural aspects related to it. What does it mean for people to move in particular routes, in particular modes, in particular systems, for not just getting to work on time, but also for their perceptions of self and other, for their perceptions of places, and for their sort of ideas about where they belong, so to speak. So I suppose that's kind of a recurrent issue that I've been looking at for quite some time. This is roughly my plan. Saying a little bit about my background, actually, well, I should say most of it, so probably be quick on that one. And then I'll sort of just say a little bit about a quite eclectic field, which is this sort of mobility theory that I think gives us some ideas and inspirations to thinking about more than A to B, the cultural component, as you want. And then I would like to try to look into various examples of something that you might want to call transportation research or mobilities research, and actually I'm not really sure which one of the labels fits the whole lot of them. I mean, there's certainly projects and publications here that are much more related to the mobilities literature, but also there are actually some projects that I'd like to just very briefly talk about that are related to much more standard understandings of transportation research. And right now it doesn't look give much sense with these strange acronyms and stuff, so hopefully I'll be able to explore a little bit more on that. And at the end, and I suppose this was partly to please my hosts, because what can I say about the future of transport research? And certainly not without being having any sort of presumptuous ideas about me telling transport researchers what to do, which is certainly not my interest. But I'll stick up my neck and see if I can sort of tie in a few loose ends from my presentation and try to think about what that might mean for a dialogue or an engagement with transportation research rather than sort of cheating lessons, so to speak. Okay, this is, as Wash already said, this is kind of my background, my very short CV. I suppose what's worth noting here is that I'm from the social sciences, and also that the trajectory of my academic career has been very much moving from policy analysis and planning towards city planning, infrastructures, and now into urban design and architecture. Actually, in retrospect, it looks like it becomes more and more tangible and much more and more materialized into physical spaces, concrete technologies, and objects and artifacts that are increasingly catching my interest. So I'm professor of urban theory, which is sort of a strange nomenclature. I think it's because it's in the architecture department that it makes sense to the architects. I think it as something beyond urban sociology. I think it has something that relates much more to a cross-disciplinary understanding of an interest in cities in a very much sort of comprehensive manner. I threw in a few bits and pieces just to sort of say that I can do the admin stuff as well. I'm the board member of a doctoral school that administer 500 plus PhD students. I'm the founder of board member of CIMAS, which I will return to, and also try to network myself into some of these mobilities areas. And I'm actually particularly interested in the flagging last bit here, the Pan-American Mobilities Network, because it seems to me as if the mobilities term and writings and theorization has been very much a European thing. And also, very recently, I've sort of started exploring that this agenda is growing in the North American, or in actually also in the Latin American context, so to speak. Okay, so a little bit about the Center for Mobility and Urban Studies, and the reason I think it's interesting just go briefly to say a few words about it here is because the way we created it, I'm in the board and was one of the founders of it. But the interesting thing, I suppose, and where it sort of links to this discussion of transportation research, is that it is, to my knowledge at least, the only mobility research center in Scandinavia, at least, where we are cross-faculty, meaning that we are in social science, in technical sciences, and also in the humanities, which means that we actually have members of the center working on very technological bits and pieces around mobility, lots of network technologies, social networks, and those sorts of things, but also we have sort of much more standard and transportation type of research. Also, I think it's very important for us to say that, for me to say that we are affiliated and linking and networking very much with CMOR, with the M Center at Drexel, and some of the other centers that are sort of gradually trying to materialize kind of an intellectual infrastructure around these sorts of issues. And I suppose, again, from those areas, it becomes clear that there is a movement towards a much more cultural understanding of transportation and mobilities, so to speak. Okay, so basically that's where I come from and a little bit about what I'm sort of doing. But what I'd like to talk to you about now is some of the elements of the theoretical building blocks that I think is useful for facilitating this dialogue between transportation and mobility and some of the more social science-oriented type of research. And also, I think, in particular, elements that will be enabling us to theorize and explain and explore some of these relations that has to do with more than HP. So this is kind of a very simplistic way of putting it, and I suppose you could add more boxes, but I will not do that. But I think what we're dealing with here is a transdisciplinary map. And of course, we're dealing with transportation planning, geography, but also I'm particularly interested in anthropology, semiotics, architecture, some of these disciplines that you might consider, very much sort of related to issues around urban studies, but not sort of at the core of transportation as such. So this is kind of the idea the map that underpins some of these ideas. And let me then try to bring it a bit more into some tangible elements. These are just a rough outline of some of these elements and some of these sources of inspiration that I think are interesting. And of course, needless to say, one of your earlier speakers in the series, John Earle's work on this literature is, of course, a cornerstone of inspiration for this kind of work. But I think also that more anthropological issues, and this is the famous, much misinterpreted, I guess, book by Marco Scheer on non-place, and this whole idea of trying to understand the cultures related to particular sites of mobility, particular transit spaces, and so forth. One of the things that I've sort of been particularly interested in, also given the fact I work in a design area, is that there are actually some work done of a very older date, you might say, and I'm very interested in the works of Kevin Lynch and some of the very sort of tangible hands-on explorations that he has around travel, the meaning of movement, and the way Lynch argues that looking at a city and its transportation system is in fact looking at the more than A to B. There's numerous examples of Lynch's reflections upon this issue where he talks about travel as a positive experience or the infrastructure system as the key sort of educational equipment for growing up in cities to learn your environment, to get acquainted with spaces and neighborhoods and different social groupings. So I think in Lynch's work there are some very sort of straightforward interesting things, but also of course there's lots of issues around the normative aspects and how to do good city form, so to speak. Related to some of these more classical sort of writings, I'm very much interested in trying to look towards some of the newer theoretical discussions about networks, objects, and artifacts, and of course very much sounds like STS-ANT type of theory. I think some of these questions opened up under this notion of assemblage theory or assemblages, primarily sort of based in thoughts by Delaunay, but also gradually diffusing into different areas of urban studies, are really interesting and helpful to try to make sense of some of this. But actually, I suppose the latter two books that I sort of took with me today are trying very much to relate to some of these questions and discussions about what is happening in infrastructures, what is happening in transportation activities. Are we actually doing it more than just moving around in the city? The cover from Martin Heyer and Arno Heindorf's book In Search of New Public Domain actually put forth the argument that it's in the between spaces, it's in the multiple electronic and physical agoras in the city that people are actually having a potential to meet each other and trying to they sort of try to put forward this case that the public domain being sites where people of different social groupings not only has the potential but also in fact do interact are probably the new interesting spaces. And quite a few of them, I would say, are related to infrastructures and transportation and mobilities. So that sort of takes us a little bit away from the more analytical discussions and much more into one of the things that I like to talk about, which is potentials of spaces. Can we enhance or create affordances for certain interactions in different spaces that we're not used to thinking of as hosting those sorts of things? And I suppose that is actually also the argument coming out of Calabrese's edited volume, A Room with a View, or Mobility, A Room with a View, arguing that sites of mobility, sites of transportation, are actually inhabitable spaces of our everyday life. It's a place where we live and not just being moved around. So trying to draw a rough contour of these sorts of building blocks for it, an understanding of more than A to B as a perspective, we might want to go a little bit more specifically into arguing what is actually then the work of mobility's research. And I think very broadly, we're engaged with both physical, social, economic, and cultural conditions and effects of mobilities. Mobility as more than A to B. But also, I think very much related to what I call a relational and mobility defined notion of place, arguing that cities, sites, and regions are always only something due to their relational couplings to other places. And that might be either in a positive sense, people, goods, investments, communities floating into a city, or in the reverse sense, being bypassed by high infrastructure, high-end infrastructures or lack of investments or what have you. So the relational configuration of sites and spaces in a network, I think, is really the key to try to open up an understanding of what is actually going on. But also, and as I said, with the reference to particularly Martin Heyer and Calabrese, I think it's really important that mobility's research analyze problems, but also discuss potentials. And I guess that's part of the heritage that I've gotten from my architectural friends, who are so keen on doing things and making changes in the world, whereas lots of my social scientist friends are much more interested in finding the issues and the problems and the proper theory, but you know the messing with reality and intervention bit is not something they're too keen on. And I think if mobility's research should touch upon or bridge towards transportation research, I think it actually also needs to switch not just from identifying problems, but also to discussing and identifying potentials. And the key idea, of course, in some of the literature is that we actually have sites, we have interaction options that are underutilized, so to speak, in our cities today, where there are either, if you wanted, business models to be developed or social interaction to be created, so to speak. And finally, and I guess this is where I needed to also do a little bit of critique in this forum, I think mobility's research is also about opening the black box that until now has been the domain of transportation planning and research. And of course, what that means, we can return to in discussion afterwards. So, in retrospect, I'm sort of trying to roughly outline some elements that I think are relevant in terms of theoretical framing of an agenda. But what I'd like to talk a little bit about is a very specific case or a specific event where we, under the Center for Mobilities and Urban Studies, have created a regional think tank. Now that sounds rather sort of posh in a way, but what we actually have done is that we've invited regional stakeholders in the northern region or in the region of North Jutland in Denmark. We invited municipalities, we invited private companies to become members of a think tank that we call, for lack of a better word, Mobility Challenge North Jutland. And from that think tank, we've actually used quite some time the last year to map out some of the hot issues, some of the questions, and some of the things that transportation agencies, transportation providers, municipalities, regional government bodies, but also, of course, researchers, center, find of particularly relevant relevance. And we keep sort of returning to some of the discussions, and this is actually just a work in progress model that is not sort of very sophisticated, but actually the issues that pop up continually relates to some relationship between the physical mobility and the virtual or the mental, but also the local and the global. Like one of our members, who's the CEO of the local airport, argued, well, you know, I want people to know what this region is all about and why should they go there. And one of the problems is that when they fly in, they don't know what to do. And so I want this to be just a click away, and these kinds of ideas of packaging a site into a much more sort of touristic accommodation for some of these wishes for or potentials that he would imagine. So come to and imagine what the site is, but also, of course, get around within and discuss also to be what is actually happening in the region, what is actually the identity of the region. And I think this is recurrent, that there's an everyday life perspective, but there's also a tourism business perspective. There's a physical network and a physical structure of infrastructures, bus providing services and those sorts of things, as well as there are some of these new mobile technological networks. We have an EU-funded project starting up trying to do some of these location-based services for travelers and how they can be buying the tickets with the cell phones and all these sorts of interesting things. So I think actually what this is a first, more or less, helpful attempt to bring up mobility's research to some of the people in practice that are actually sitting with issues in the daily practices where they want problems to be addressed and solved and so forth. And I think part of that discussion is very much to talk about potentials, not only looking at a region that has the standard transition from an industrial sort of shipyard industry region into a university region, but also with a lot of unemployment and a lot of discussions about what are the alternatives in terms of the economic situation. So the challenge in terms of mobility terms for the region of North Jutland is to figure out how to sort of mediate the local and the global, how to attract certain things, but also how to afford certain things whilst being within. But also it is, of course, to accommodate people living there, recognizing the identity of regions and villages and cities, and it is a very rural area, it should be said. So I think those are sort of elements of how we have tried to bring certain parts of the research agenda into a contact with some of the professions. Okay, so come this far, I think there's this might sound very much like, you know, wishful thinking and, you know, some highbrow theories and stuff. So I'd like to sort of make a small tour through some of the research that I've been involved with, where I think there is actually bridges taking place between, or being constructed between, mobilities, cultural aspects of mobilities research, and then more transportation, standard transportation issues. So I suppose what I'm trying to argue with the following kinds of examples is that there is actually something to be said in terms of relating these fields. So the very first project I want to talk about is a project that was finalized some years ago under what was then called the Transportation Council, which was a public funding body for transportation research in Denmark. And under this project, Transportation and Planning, I was engaged with a few of the projects, and I did this book in collaboration with Professor Pines. And I think this was particularly illustrative of this discussion, because the whole research was framed very much in terms of quantitative, location-based surveys, travel diaries, you know, the whole sort of stand-up setup of transportation investigation. And I came in late in the project, post the design of the research project, and I sort of argued that maybe we should talk to people. Maybe we should, you know, chat to people about how they feel about these routes, because, you know, maybe they are not always just taking the quickest route, or maybe they're not always taking, you know, the most cheap fare or whatever. So what we actually did in this project, which was mapping and interviewing and discussing the relationship between urban transportation and physical structures in the greater Copenhagen area, was that we threw in some extra elements, so to speak, that related to notions of culture, normativity, how people felt about things, aesthetics, even beautiful routes, sceneries, those sorts of things. And of course, they do not account for a huge number of travels, trips in the city of Copenhagen. But actually, there was a fair amount of issues that was uncovered by these sorts of exploratory questions. We took that further into a conceptualization of what we call transport rationalities or transport rationales, arguing that maybe there are aesthetics and other kind of almost emotional discussions to be uncovered as well, which seemed, as far as I understand, and as far as my collaboration with Pilanes was concerned, something that was let out of the transportation research agenda in general. So I think what we tried to do with this element of qualitative research and ethnographic research was to bring in things in addition to the more mainstream transportation research. Now, very briefly, I did this group with Tim Richardson, and what I think is relevant here in this context is that we're looking at something that you might think is very technical or very very much about engineering and transport. We're looking at how Europe is being reconfigured by transnational transportation networks. But what our argument was actually was that this was not just reconfiguring flows. This was not just the physical backbone of the internal market, but it was actually also offering new interpretations of what does it mean to be European? What does it mean to be in Europe? How are Europe's relations being repositioned and reconfigured by infrastructures of a different type of nature? Also, we tried to coin a concept of Europe of monotopia, which is sort of this idea that the new construction of Europe in infrastructure terms is very much related to an instrumental perspective, i.e. more flow, less friction as the main driver to the whole thing, so to speak. I don't want to jump the scale very much. This is a work in progress, ongoing project that we're doing together with the Danish Cancer Society and Copenhagen University, and we got funding from the Danish Research Council as well. And it's sort of very much taking its point of departure in bike ability as a way into public health as a discussion. You might find it quite hard to put money into a Danish context for getting people to bike, because there's a fair amount of people biking already. But I think what we've been doing in our research team here is to try to explore much more into detail what are actually people's perceptions, how do people feel about biking, what are even down to the aesthetics of the routing, of the infrastructure, the bike, sort of, we've got really detailed sort of discussions about curvatures of and curbs and lightnings and all sorts of very, very sort of small-scale physical design. And I think those elements sort of relates, in my understanding, to the cultural aspect very much as we start talking to people about how they interpret it. What do they make sense of them? What are these sites for? Why do they prefer to use these bike lanes and so forth? And actually, I think it's fair to say that at least in Danish transportation research and policy, most emphasis has been put on issues of transport safety. So you'd be interested in the correlation between the number of the meters or kilometers of bike lanes and the number of traffic injuries. But our claim here is that maybe it's interesting also to start exploring how people appropriate bike infrastructures. How do they think of them as the way of thinking and experience the city? Are they actually affording a particular way of engaging with the built environment that might be able to increase our understanding of these sorts of things? Okay, that's one work in progress, and this is even more work in progress as this is only just started. And I'm sorry I have this boring thing to bring with me, but that's all we have. It's a project called Activity-Based Travel Chains and Sustainable Mobility. And it's a collaboration with the Danish Technical University, and they're very much interested in modeling, and they're very much interested in activity-based modeling as something on its own. What we sort of added to this discussion is two work packages, one on GPS data and one on qualitative data, trying to see if those modelings that they're actually working with, they can actually be enhanced or criticized or, you know, challenged or whatever by means of some of these things. I mean, the GPS thing is quite interesting because in Danish transportation research there are sort of recurrent collections of data by what we call transportation TU data, which are like phone interviews to people. One of the biases is that people forget. We call people and ask them how did you travel yesterday, and actually people forget quite a number of little trips, and the GPS don't forget anything. So you can actually start sort of enhancing that that picture, so to speak. And in the other sense, I sort of tried to argue that, well, maybe some of these. We have an interesting discussion with the transportation researchers here because they think, oh, so maybe you can account for some of the residuals in the model. And I don't think of it as residuals in the model. I think of, you know, making sense of your practices and as you move around in the city. But that's another way of trying to open up an invitation or a discussion between those areas. Okay, so I'll shift into a completely different mode than in terms of projects and ways of thinking. This is related to some research I did in a very nearby place from my department. This is a public square in the heart of Aalborg, and actually Nytorv has been famous for the decision processes around it, which Ben Kruger has described very much around democracy and power and rationalities and those sorts of issues. But what I was interested in, this space is just outside the window, and I've been to numerous meetings where, you know, the gaze drifts, and then suddenly I'm looking at this strange place where people sort of move around. And there is not a fully implemented shared space philosophy here, but there is elements of it. So there's Chinese granite, and there's sort of it used to be very sort of clearly paved and stuff, but it's sort of a bit weird space where people don't really know what to do. So I've been looking at it systematically for 4 weeks together with a research assistant, and figured out how people actually negotiate these spaces and how they, there are all sorts of things down to very, very nitty-gritty things about curbs and stuff, until, you know, how people actually negotiate depending on speed and power, of course, you know, big trucks before little trolleys and stuff like that. But also what I was particularly interested in was this negotiation in motion. The fact that when you look at something as mundane and ordinary as a public space where people have to move around, they're actually unfolding quite a number of things that has to do with not getting from A to B, but who are you? How do you position yourself in space? How do you make your way, so to speak? There's some quite funny or interesting examples of, you know, four blokes and city, you know, on the towel, you know, they don't, and other people have sliding techniques and much more sort of subtle ways of getting around in the city. And this was very much inspired by the work of Irving Goffman and the way that people sort of engage with each other in mobile practices, so to speak. But what I wanted to make a point of was that these are the kinds of things that, talking to the municipal transportation planners, they didn't think of this space at all like this. This was just there's a bus station here, and there's this crossing and so forth. But actually, in front of McDonald's here, a lot of young people meet, and it's a sort of a public living room for the city. And the way people sort of positions themselves and moves around in this space, I think, is very much something that is needed to include into the discussion of transportation. Okay, so final two examples. This one, it was related to the curriculum in urban design, where we wanted the students to explore the different meanings of a subway system or metro, so to speak. And on your far left, you have the Copenhagen Metro, which is a very interesting piece of very generic design. Senior citizens complain regularly to the authorities that, you know, there are no benches, and the metro company says, well, what do you need a bench? There's a train coming in 30 seconds. So these are places for circulation only. You don't find any commercial programs, you don't find any businesses, there are no hanging out, there's no, you know, nothing actually, except for the pure flow, so to speak. Whereas the Parisian Metro and the London Tube, of course, have different configurations and different offerings, so to speak. What I think was interesting here was very much this idea of not just juxtaposing a very sort of non-frictional pure flow model, but also trying to engage with some of the planners and engineers behind the metro project to try to understand how come they, you know, coined this particular model for the metro of Copenhagen. And I think I'm still sort of looking for the precise answers. But it's definitely working in a different manner. You experience it very differently when you ride the tube or the Parisian metro, and then apart from the size of the systems, of course, because Copenhagen is a tiny system, even though it's been even expanded. But my point here was to try to sort of get also the urban design students to be interested in what they thought from the beginning was something that was for engineers, you know, metros. You know, we don't do metros, we only do urban spaces. And urban spaces was different. We had, for 6 years in a row, we've done study trips to Copenhagen and to London. And this year, this fall, also we had an interesting conversation with an architect planner from the municipality of Copenhagen, who was very sort of friendly and wanted us to come. But he said, I don't know, why do you want to come seeing us? You guys are designers, and so what has that to do with metros? And I think that's the whole point, to try and to push that agenda a bit and saying, well, maybe designing metros and those spaces actually should be included into a design or even more into the cultural realm, so to speak. There are actually potentials for interaction for these spaces that are underutilized. And just as a side remark, there's a huge pressure for commercial and ads into the metro system. There are a few ones, but they're very sort of low-key, and the metro authority doesn't like to talk about them very much because they have this dream of the purely sort of and the whole sort of aesthetics is like, you know, concrete and glass and very sort of modernist type of aesthetics related to it. And they don't like this idea of Hugo Boss conversions and other things into the metro. But there is a strong pressure because, of course, for every year they keep it at a distance, they're losing potential revenue. But that's another side to it, I would say. Okay, so final sort of explorations into my strange way of talking about transport. This is very much work in progress. This is some ideas related to a project or a book that I'm writing, which I call Staging Mobilities. And actually, this is where I want to sort of use Goffman very much indeed. I'm sort of looking at mobilities and thinking about that they're actually being staged as it is from above. You know, you have transportation planners, you have policy strategies, you have congestion charging, things that try to modify people's behavior and try to do things around this. So it's sort of a a staging from above, so to speak. But equally, and I think this is very clear for a sort of Goffman-inspired sociologist like myself, people are staging themselves every day, all the time within, right? And we're looking at it in the square in Aalborg, where people are negotiating not only in different techniques and tactics, but also, of course, in the city. In general, people are choosing mode of transportation, people are moving around in particular ways, depending on not just the physical material conditions, but also who they think they are, how they like to be perceived, you know, those sorts of issues. So I think what's interesting for me is to try to see this kind of double edge to it, where you see that people are in motion and mobilities are actually partly being staged by the top-down type of design or architectural planning or transportation engineering, as well as they are working their ways around into these environments and actually negotiate their interaction in a way that I think transportation planning probably, or transportation research probably has not paid too much attention to. Okay, so time is running, and I'll try to very briefly argue that there's different bits and pieces of the general discussion about mobility's turn that you can argue is relevant to opening up an agenda for understanding transportation as much more than moving people from A to B. Also, I was trying to sort of argue that I've done some research that tried to follow up on some of these ideas, try to engage with transportation research rather than be sitting in my mobility's turn camp and arguing that everybody should do everything else. So I was sort of trying to take my own medicine, as it were, and see if I could engage in some interesting projects with other people from disciplines much more closely related to transportation planning and transportation research. And I think that is actually what is going on. It's sort of trying to make some of these bridges. So that will take me to these very final points. Actually, I don't have any qualified opinions about the future for transportation research as such. I argue that there are elements in the mobility's turn and in the cultural way of thinking about transportation that might be engaged with, which is certainly not the same as explaining to people what the future is. I was attending an interesting meeting yesterday afternoon in our region. And actually, we have a Minister of Transport who has officially announced that he would like a mobilities commission. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. And I talked to the traffic engineers and the regional planners. They said, oh, relax. You know, it's just a buzzword. Someone just told him about this mobility thing. Because when you ask him, he's still talking rails and tracks and tarmac and stuff. So he's still living in the world of infrastructure and transport. And we had a seminar yesterday with the regional planners and with the transportation engineers where we talked about how can we push that agenda a bit? How can we actually suggest to the minister that maybe he's not just minister for rails and tarmacs and things, but maybe he's also, you know, has a responsibility for how people actually perceive the cities, how their everyday life is going about. And I think this was quite interesting to hear that they're now revising this regional development plan, which is not actually an infrastructure plan, but they're sort of trying to put that element to it, arguing partly from this model we saw before that getting there is really important, and figuring out what to do once you're there is also important. And that is also related, of course, to businesses, to investment, to bringing in new infrastructure projects, so to speak. Okay, so if we build this culture, we'll then transport this too, I guess. So what might be interesting to discuss? I don't know. At least I think that some of the elements related to and I actually haven't really talked about. We have some GPS projects as well in a research group that I should have talked a little bit about. But network technologies and the relational sense of place, I think, is something that we need to embrace much more cleverly across the boundary between sociology and mobilities and research and engineering and transportation research as well. I actually think that we now see a number of I was interviewed by a local newspaper journalist the other day, and she was talking about how people, you know, increasingly just don't belong to anywhere. I think that's way too pessimistic. I think I've done some research on youngsters in our city region, and they have a complete different map. I mean, they orchestrate and coordinate their movements and their uses of the city and the infrastructure by the cell phone and the SMS text and their Facebooks. So they actually float around in this city. It's actually divided by a fjord, and there's this good old north-south divide. The young people have a completely different setting, look upon this setting, and try to think much more like a functional system where they can actually go one place for cinema, go another place for a party, go somewhere else for something completely different. So they don't really have this very sort of tied-in relationship. So I think there's something to be looked at there. Flow constitutes place, as I argued, that we need to take the point of view in an understanding of place very much defined by relations and flows. But also that we need to look beyond the instrumental. There are, of course, lots of reasons why people move the way they do that are fairly conditional on related to instrumental rationalities, either in terms of friction of distance, in terms of cost, you know, sorts of things. But actually, that is missing quite a bit if that is the only perception you have of what it is. I think we're actually into a completely different business of creating identity and culture and interactions as well. And so maybe we could even start talking about the aesthetics of mobility, which is something that at least my architectural friends and colleagues are keen on. So, what does this mean? And I guess this is more to my concerned geography friends doing neighborhood research. They were not very pleased with the mobility system. They think everything flows and drifts away and stuff. I argue that the foregrounding of the mobilities does not mean that everything is in flux, that there is no social stability or that everything is solid, melts into air. Rather, it means that places, sites, buildings, terminals, cities, and regions must be understood in their complex relationship to the fluid and fixed, flow and stasis, friction and movement. I think we might want to explore what Ingersoll have talked about when he talks about infrastructure as art. And in this quote from his 2006 book about Stroll, he argues that, quote, transportation infrastructure continued to be designed with the positivist ethos of government institutions and thus elicit a certain inevitable determinism that corresponds to the economics of increased mobility. Despite the potential consensus, these interventions are often upsetting and alienating. Citizens and designers could demand more of infrastructure than just its primary function. Infrastructure as utilitarian responses to the present problems of mobility invariably causes environmental and social problems. To approach infrastructure as art can provide a way of dealing with the violence it injects into the system because it needs to create civic meaning. I think these are sort of rhetorics on the high note, maybe, but still. I think that's really a way of trying to embrace and engage with infrastructure from a completely different setting, and also including some of these more aesthetic elements that has been considered something that has nothing to do whatsoever with infrastructure. So, final point. I think what I'm arguing for most of all is what I call critical mobility thinking. I think critical, not just in the classic term of looking at power and exclusion, but also think about innovative conceptual work, innovative methodological work, and cross-disciplinary work, trying to get around these sorts of things in new ways, in novel ways, and try to interact with different disciplines and those sorts of things. I think the future of both mobility research, but also transport research, lies in a dialogue, in a critical creative engagement with different fields. And of course, I deliberately did not talk about what mobility research can learn from transportation research. As I take it, that I think this is quite evident. I'm sort of trying to take my own medicine here and arguing that by setting up research projects together with transportation researchers and engineers, we're sort of pushing towards engagement between mobilities rather than arguing that that's a restricted social science discipline. But I'm sure that somebody might disagree with me on that. So, future of transportation research is guess, bright and nice light. Funding is on the way and all of that. But I think also there are some opportunities to engage with these more strange social scientists like myself that are looking at people, how they sort of move about in the city, and thinking of that as an inherent element of infrastructure, transportation, and urbanism, and not just as something for engineers. Thank you for your attention.